So far, it was going swimmingly, except for one thing.
No Batman! None, nada, zilch, zero! He's nowhere to be seen! It's been a month now, and nothing.
Joker knew in his bones, especially in his elbows, but also in his scapulae, that the Dark Knight was somewhere in No Man's Land. He'd seen the signs, for God's sake, the tags on walls in the shape of a bat. He'd heard the talk. Somewhere in the carnage and broken buildings, along the decrepit streets and tortured boulevards, somewhere out there, the Batman was waiting for him.
It's really starting to tick me off.
But Puddin' and Ratman always beat you up.
You're missing the point, Harley. It's a running gag.
Harley didn't understand. What could he expect from her anyway? She was dressed up like a harlequin and kept talking about how they should make babies at some point. Babies. Like he needed that trouble, changing the oil on a squealing child on top of all the other many duties he had found himself with. He'd been working hard as it was. The thought of more work, that just made his skin try to crawl away.
Psychiatrist. Go figure.
Other than the Batman, though, he had to admit things were good. Even from atop Arkham, looking at the No Man's Land, he hadn't realized how bad it was on the ground, how much fun could be had. He and Harley had started out together almost a month before, taking their time on the road down from the asylum, eventually wandering into Burnley, where people ran away when they saw him in a really funny fashion. Sometimes they ran so scared they fell down and rolled and hurt themselves really badly. And then Joker would wander over, taking his time about it, and offer them a hand up. Depending on his mood, he'd be friendly and solicitous, or outright hostile. And sometimes, just for kicks, he'd tell Harley to do a trick. Harley, he had discovered, had tricks. One of her favorites involved a rusty cheese grater and a stapler. It didn't always work, mostly because people didn't tend to sit still for that sort of thing, but it gave Joker a consistent laugh, and he figured in time Harley would have it down to a science. Another thing had happened too, and frankly, it had helped his self-esteem. It had gone down like this. About 2 weeks after leaving Arkham, Joker and Harley had gone up to the old stadium where the Gotham Knights played. Harley, it turned out, was a baseball fan. So they went to see if the Knights, in fact, had a chance at all of winning the pennant. They'd arrived to find the stadium all but empty and barely still standing. While Harley ran the bases, Joker picked through the dugouts, looking for a really good set of cleats.
Oh my God.
Joker turned around to see a tall and skinny man peeking from around the corner of the hallway that led back to the locker rooms.
Excuse me, do you know where I can find some really good cleats?
The man turned and ran for it.
Harley! This way!
The man made it down the hallway, then turned right, knocking open a door, Joker right behind him. They entered the visiting team's locker room, and Joker took in all that was around him. There were about 15 other men in there, aside from the tall and skinny one, and it was clear that they'd turned the space into their own little clubhouse. There were open crates of salvaged goods, the odd weapons scattered around. A rather nifty-looking baseball bat, with spikes on the broad end, was leaning against the locker right beside Joker. He picked it up, checking its weight, then cocked his head at the crowd, most of whom were already backing away from him.
Hey! Wanna play Three Flies Out?
One of the men had a really entertaining nose.
Look, we don't want any trouble with you!
Fair enough. I don't want any trouble with you.
He pointed the bat at Tall and Skinny.
He didn't answer my question, though.
Nose looked at Skinny.
Answer his question.
He wants cleats.
We don't have cleats.
No, you must have cleats.
Joker hopped up on the bench and brought the bat down onto Skinny's head.
Oh, yes. And a batting helmet.
Please, we don't want any trouble with you.
I know. You said that already. Cleats!
This time, Joker took out the man to Nose's left.
You know, you ought to do something about that nasty bleeding. Maybe a styptic.
Harley appeared in the doorway, wearing a catcher's mask. She had a shoe on each of her hands.
Mr. J, I found your cleats!
I need cleats, Harley, not spikes. Those are spikes.
Huh?
She looked at the shoes on her hands, then punched at the nearest face.
Phooey.
Oh, my eyes!
The man with the unlucky face staggered back.
Please! Whatever you want!
What, you mean aside from cleats?
Yeah.
Let's see.
There were 12 of them, without any obvious injuries yet.
Plus Harley and I, that makes 14. Do you have uniforms?
I could find some. I know where some are.
Harley, go with Mr. Nose here and bring back all the uniforms you can find.
Okay, Puddin.
Joker occupied himself while awaiting their return by practicing his swings at the air. Then Nose and Harley came back, each with an armful of clothes.
Put them on, boys!
But there were only 13 uniforms.
Oh, no.
The one man who hadn't managed to get himself a jersey and matching pants began frantically searching the empty lockers.
No, I'm sorry, but I'm just going to have to cut you from the team.
Oh, God!
The man tried for the door, and Harley blocked him with one of her fancier kicks.
Baseball is a team effort, and you're just not pulling your weight. Gentlemen, you represent our national pastime. And if you ask me, it's way past time for us to turn this season around. It's time to get off your flabby keisters and bring that highly coveted and utterly useless pennant home to this dear old painted lady we love to call Gotham. This team is under new management, so things are gonna change around here. I'm gonna see some hustle, some moxie, some clawing and scratching by the kind of players who aren't afraid of getting their fingernails dirty and their cleats bloody. So we're gonna hit them high. We're gonna hit them low. We're gonna hit them where it really hurts. We're gonna run it to the inside. We're gonna run it to the outside. We're gonna run it over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. And now our team mascot, Miss Harley Quinn, will lead us in a short prayer.
Joker is God.
The man gaped, stunned.
Amen.
Amen.
That's hardly team spirit, boys.
Joker hefted the bat again.
Amen!
That's better. Okay now, let's go on out there and play some ball!
That had started his gang. Of course, almost all of the original team got cut, but Harley was great at recruiting new players, and the roster had now nearly tripled. He looked at his team fondly.
My boys.
Much better now than on that opening day at Knight Stadium. Those players then, they really hadn't had any interest in the game. But these new ones that Harley kept finding, they were his kind of people. They didn't argue, they did what they were told, and all of them had quick wrists and a mean stroke with their bats.
With this team, we can get all of Gotham behind us.
I just want to know what's happened to her, that's all.
Why don't you go by her apartment and find out?
Oracle was focusing on the monitor in front of her. Code streamed by on the screen, numbers flying quickly past as her eyes tried to track the incoming information.
You know where it is, after all.
I went by. She wasn't there.
Oracle's eyes stopped their back and forth for a moment, then resumed.
Oh, well.
You know where she is, don't you?
Maybe.
I'd appreciate it if you told me.
Don't you have work to do? Doesn't Batman have you investigating something?
Yeah, the warehouses on the Miller docks. Already checked them out. They've been cleared. Penguin's got men guarding the locations. Nothing's inside. Must be expecting a delivery.
Oracle turned from the screen, looking up at Nightwing.
How many warehouses?
6. Babs, look, tell me where Huntress is and I'll get out of your hair.
Why do you want to know?
Because I'm worried about her.
Oh?
Yeah, oh. What's that supposed to mean, oh? Oh what?
Just, oh.
It's not what you think.
You don't know what I think, Dick.
Actually, you're broadcasting it pretty loud. You don't like her. You don't like that I like her.
So you admit it?
Admit it? Admit that I like her? Of course I like her, Babs. I think she's basically a decent person who's trying to do the best she can.
She's a murderer, and quite possibly insane.
That's harsh.
Oracle spun her chair around to face him.
No, it's a fact. She's a killer. She has a vendetta thing going on. Maybe you're not up on the facts, Dick, but I am, because that's my job here. Helena Bertinelli isn't wearing a costume because she wants to do what's right for the people of Gotham. She isn't wearing that getup of hers because she's out for justice. She wants revenge, plain and simple.
Did she kill anyone while she was Batgirl? Well, if she's as nuts as you say, why didn't she?
She kept it under control, that's why.
Uh-huh. And that makes her insane how, exactly?
You want to know where she is, Dick? I'll tell you. I got a report from Vanessa this morning, and another of my eyes, Alex, he confirmed it. She's on the Upper West Side. She's in with Pettit and his strongmen, the Martial Law Brigade. Apparently, she's playing on their team now.
Nightwing frowned darkly.
Damn it!
Not so rosy now, is it?
He shook his head slightly, almost not listening. There was a plan. He knew there was a plan, and that Batman had put it in motion. But when he'd asked Bruce, he'd received only silence in response. The traditional answer that Nightwing remembered since childhood. Sometimes, it honestly felt as if nothing had changed between him and Batman. Nothing at all.
Dick.
He blinked, and saw that Oracle was watching him with some concern.
I was just... I am hard on her. But you've got to understand, I think it's warranted.
It is warranted. That's not what concerns me.
Then what?
Batman.
And that was the only answer necessary. Patience was the key, and Bane knew that. And so he took his time before making the first move. A lot of time. Almost 2 weeks' worth. Miss Graves, he noted, seemed perfectly content with this, allowing him to proceed at his own pace and staying out of the way. She had something going on with the Penguin, he had gathered that much, and he suspected he knew what that was. But it didn't concern him, and thus he devoted no energy to confirming his suspicions. Most of the initial work was surveillance. The target location was in the center of Two-Face's Southern Territory near City Hall. And though the Hall of Records itself was not heavily guarded, there were many men in the area, and several were armed. And he knew they would respond in kind to his actions once he began. For that reason, among others, he planned carefully, caching weapons at strategic locations, mapping his routes, and calculating his best angle of attack. Only when he was certain he had accounted for all of the variables did he begin. He had a costume, his traditional outfit for actions such as these, but put it aside in favor of more utilitarian garb. This was, in his mind, a military operation, almost commando work, and he dressed accordingly. He wore his mask, nonetheless. Concealing his features was a conceit, but he knew the psychological value it would provide.
You ready?
I am. You will not see me for the next couple of days. This will take some time.
Very well.
She watched as he armed himself, as he hoisted the mammoth pack onto his back. He was carrying over 200 pounds of equipment, a weight great enough for even him to feel its effects. After making certain it was seated properly, he made for the exit.
May you have good luck.
Luck will play no part in this.
The covert infiltration was flawless, and Bane was inside the Hall of Records before darkness had completely fallen. He stowed the majority of his gear in an empty office, and then, with a gun strapped to his thigh and a knife in his hand, he began making his way silently through the halls, working from the top floor down. He encountered no one until reaching the ground level, where Two-Face had posted guards at all of the entrances. Bane had expected as much. Returning to the office where he'd left his gear, he began gathering the explosives he had made. Patiently, he wired each floor, starting with the top and again working his way down. There was no rush, and haste, he knew, would lead to a mistake. He even had the luxury of double-checking his work, and so he did. By dawn, he had completely wired the upper floors of the building, the guards below blissfully unaware of his presence. Shortly after daybreak, the guards were relieved by their replacements.
See you ladies later. Have fun.
Go to hell.
Bane watched as the old departed and the new settled in. Then he returned to the office for the third time, and after barricading the door, lay down for a nap. He felt good about his progress and certain in his hiding place and safety, but nonetheless, it was hard for him to fall asleep. He ached for a good woman or a fine cigar or some rich rare brandy, and his mind wandered among such thoughts for a good hour before he was able to calm it enough to truly sleep. It was dark when he awoke, and he sat up in the office, listening carefully for almost 2 minutes before assuring himself that all was as it should be. Using the night vision goggles from his bag, he gathered the two machine pistols and reconfirmed that each was fully loaded. Then he put the pack on once again, the detonator in his pocket, and snuck back into the hallway, guns in each hand. The same guards from the night before were at their posts again. Without preamble, Bane opened fire. None of the guards reacted in time to return the shots. Bane searched the bodies. One had a radio, and he took it, hooking it to his belt in order to monitor any transmissions that Two-Face might broadcast. According to Bane's surveillance, he would be safe until dawn, when the relief arrived. Finished with his searching of the cooling bodies, he moved the corpses out of the main hall, dumping one after the other inside the nearby men's room. He used four more explosives to mine each of the doorways into the building, running nearly invisible tripwires back and forth across the thresholds to prevent any entry. Then he armed the devices. Anyone trying to enter via a doorway wouldn't have time to regret the decision. He moved to the basement level, where the actual records had been kept. He knew from reviewing the blueprints Miss Graves had supplied that there were eight separate rooms that housed the mainframe computers and the electronic data that was now useless in No Man's Land. Another four rooms, almost cavernously huge, housed the hard copies. Bane took the mainframe rooms first, going from computer to computer, systematically removing the platters of digital tape, setting each aside. When he had finished with the machines, he moved on to the hard copies. This took most of the night, moving down the rows and rows of files, dumping all of each drawer's contents onto the floor. It was tedious and repetitious, and Bane didn't much enjoy the task, but it had to be done, and he knew it had to be done this way. Records safe inside their filing cabinets might survive what was to come, and the instructions from Miss Graves had been absolutely clear. When he was finished with the second room of hard copies, he turned and surveyed the scene. And for a moment, he marveled at the amount of paper spreading out before him.
Maravilloso.
It completely covered the floor, in places almost 2 feet deep, and the scent of it was pleasant and almost overwhelming. There was one set of records he had retrieved personally that he had yet to add to the pile, though, and he held them in his hand for a moment longer.
Wayne.
Before opening the thick file and leafing through the contents. Technically, what he held was only one small part of what was, relatively, a much larger set of records. Birth and death certificates, titles and deeds, the annotated history of a dynasty. Stretching back to the late 1600s, Waynes had lived in Gotham City before it was called that. The final copies were, of course, the birth certificate for Bruce, followed almost immediately by the death certificates for Thomas and Martha. Bane allowed himself a moment of commiseration, then banished it entirely. Bruce Wayne had at least known a father and a mother, proud people who had left him a legacy. He, on the other hand, had never known a father at all, and his own mother had been less a parent than the prison's whore. With a flick of his wrist, he sent the files fluttering to the ground, then moved purposefully out of the room, back to where he had left the platters of digital tape. He then broke each spool apart with his bare hands, letting the celluloid strips spring wildly and uncoil. He checked his watch and noted that it was already past 5:30 in the morning. Phase one was now entirely completed, and with time to spare. Retrieving the pack from where he had stowed it, he returned once again to the lobby, where he began assembling the machine gun, mounting it on its tripod. He made certain that all the links in the belt of ammunition were smooth, that there would be no kinks in the feeding of the rounds. His watch now read 11 minutes past 6. He settled back to wait. The relief arrived precisely at 8, as they had the morning before, and Bane lay flat on the floor, covering his head, as the doors opened. He could feel the concussion of the blast rolling back into the building and over him. The dust cleared, and no one was in the doorway. He saw a piece of a leg just beyond the entrance, presumably a segment of the man who had first tried to enter. The silence stretched on. Momentarily, he caught a breath of the autumn air from outside. Someone stuck his head around the corner cautiously, and Bane didn't hesitate. Phase two had begun.
Ah!
perish.
With all due respect, Lieutenant, go to hell!
That's good. Just remember to breathe and push.
I am pushing!
And you're doing great. Breathe. Andy? Keep holding her hand.
Okay.
Touch me and I'll kill you, DeFilippis! Oh, God!
You're doing great, Chris. You're doing fine. You're almost there. I can see the head. Just another couple of...
This hurts! Oh, Jesus, God damn it! Ow, ow, damn it! How did I let you do this to me?
I
swear you're gonna pay for this! I swear to God!
I love you.
Christina's hand was almost white from the strength of her grip around Andy's arm. She was almost sitting up in bed. Her expression changed suddenly, and she fell back. Andy put a hand on her brow, wiping her hair back.
It's okay. You did great, baby. You did great.
Here's a blanket.
Essen took the blanket Montoya handed her, swaddling the newborn gently. She looked up at where Christina and Andy were both staring at her, and she thought it was almost cute how both of them had the same stunned expression, the same look of absolute wonder in their eyes.
Oh.
It's a boy, a perfect little boy. Congratulations.
Later, outside of the bungalow that Ware and DeFilippis were now using as their home, Essen joined her husband. It was evening and cool, the edge of an autumn crispness in the air, and she slipped her hand into his, giving it a squeeze.
A boy, huh?
Yep.
And everything is good?
Looks that way. All his fingers and toes are there at any rate. In a week or so, we can have someone take them up to Dr. Tompkins. Have a real doctor look at their work.
Good idea. So this kid have a name?
A mouthful of a name. Justin Michael DeFilippis Weir.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Just imagine yelling that from your front porch.
Not what I meant. From all the shouting going on in there, I wasn't sure if it was a birth or an interrogation.
Well, rubber hoses can be used in both situations, so it's understandable.
They began walking toward their home.
You know, I think that's the fourth kid I've delivered in my career as a cop. Four. Wow.
I never have.
No?
No. Almost all the cops I know, they've delivered at least one child, or been present for at least one delivery in the field. Not me. I keep missing out.
Children.
Gordon stopped, moving his hand to her shoulder and looking in her eyes.
We agreed when we got married. You regretting that decision?
Nope. I've got you, and that makes me happy.
You're happy?
Right now? Yes. I'm walking home with my husband, the commissioner of the police for the city of Gotham. We're safe. We've got a roof over our head. We're surviving. You told me a while back that you were afraid with Pettit gone, we'd crumble. Well, it's been months, and here we still are. Yeah, I'm happy, and I'm proud.
They stayed in the clinch, lips together, and she felt her heart beginning to race, and the same sense of wonder that, after so long, he could still excite her like this, still make her feel as young and strong and potent as he had all those years ago, when they'd first met.
Hey, you two! Get a room, why don't you?
She broke away from her husband long enough to turn and spot Bullock and Montoya a couple of doors down, sitting on the stoop side by side.
Come on. We can go back to our place and do that thing people do when they want to make babies.
Except without the baby-making part.
Whatever you want.
Sarah took her husband by the hand and led him the rest of the way home. Then she didn't have to lead him at all. He was careful not to wake Sarah when he rose the next morning just before dawn. Quietly opening the door to the bedroom, he stopped and looked back, seeing her still asleep. He let himself smile, and for the first time in months, didn't feel guilty that he could. Things were bad, sure, but not impossible. Hell, even in no man's land, people were having babies. If that didn't prove that life would triumph no matter what, he didn't know what did. He moved into the kitchen, finding a half-empty can of Sterno in which he started a fire to heat some water. Back when they'd taken Penguin's land south of the park, in one of the caches they'd found some vacuum-sealed French roast, already ground, and he used a little of it now to make himself a cup of coffee. He took the cup with him out to the garden, planning to watch the sunrise. He settled on the bench, watching the dawn beginning to bleed over the horizon, when he heard the voice right behind him.
Jimmy?
The hot coffee scalded the back of his hand. From the corner of Gordon's eye, he saw Two-Face standing just behind him to the left. He had a gun in his hand, not quite pointed at Gordon's side.
What do you want?
It's your turn to fulfill our bargain.
Our deal is off. It has been for months, long over.
For you? Two people make a deal, two people end it.
Slowly, Gordon turned, facing him, holding the mug with both hands. He glanced at Two-Face's free hand and was vaguely relieved to see that the coin was nowhere in sight.
You tried to have me murdered. You hired David Kane to do the job. You think I don't know?
Well, that had nothing to do with our bargain. That had to do with Renee.
What?
It's not important right now.
Two-Face was leaning down.
You have to help me, Jim, like I helped you. I've got a lunatic on the loose in my territory. He's holed up in the Hall of Records, killing my men. I've lost half my troops to this animal. You have to help me.
For a moment, Gordon marveled at Two-Face's ego, how he could toss out words like animal and lunatic without a moment's pause. Then it struck him that anyone who could send Two-Face running for help had to be bad news indeed.
You owe me.
I owe you nothing.
Damn you, Jim! I need your help.
No.
I could kill you. You know that. Half of me wants to.
Then you'll kill me.
You're a cop. You're the law. This man is committing murder in my sector. You have to do something.
I stopped being a cop months ago. I stopped being a cop when I shook hands with you.
Gordon felt the fatigue clawing at his back, knocking away what dim pleasure still remained of the night before.
You'll get nothing from me.
Two-Face brought the gun up, and Gordon flung the coffee at his face. Gordon dove out of the way, rolled, and reached for the nearest suitable weapon, coming up with a hand trowel from the potting bench. Two-Face was shaking his head, the hot coffee rising off him with steam. Gordon lunged, bringing the trowel down as if it were a knife, and Two-Face barely backed away from the blow, then brought the pistol down hard, going for Gordon's neck. For a second, Gordon saw nothing but heat, bright and white, and when he got his vision back, Two-Face had the gun pressed to his temple, the coin ready in his other hand.
Drop it!
Gordon turned his head to see Sarah in the doorway of the garden, an oversized sweatshirt and nothing else on, her service pistol in her hands.
Drop it and move away from him or I'll kill you.
Two-Face let go of the gun and backed off. Then he turned and went for the wall of the garden. Up and over it in a matter of seconds. Gordon scrabbled for the gun that Two-Face had dropped on the ground. Sarah was at his side then, helping him up. Gordon felt his ear with one hand, the sting where the flesh had been torn.
Oh, you had him. Why didn't you shoot?
I haven't had bullets in over 2 months.
Want to see what power really is? Want to see how you get things done in the no man's land?
Show me.
William Pettit and Huntress were in the basement of the building he was using as his headquarters. The area was remarkably clean and free of debris, and she followed him down a hallway to a room marked storage. Pettit used a key from his pocket to open the door, pushing it back and allowing her to lead the way in. The room was filled with large storage containers, almost like giant lockers, but these were wood-framed and walled with chain link. Each container was filled with a variety of things, presumably objects put into storage by the original tenants of the apartment building, from cardboard boxes to old exercise machines to broken pieces of stereo equipment. Huntress took it all in, then looked at Pettit, who moved past her, heading down the narrow corridor between rows. At the end, he took a left and unlocked another door. Inside this room were crates stacked upon crates, some covered with tarp, others exposed. Pettit shot Huntress a grin, then yanked back a tarp. He pulled open the container that had been concealed beneath it and reached into the crate.
Used to live in this building, you know. Couldn't get back here as often as I wanted to when I was playing coward along with Gordon and the rest of those wimps. Now, though, rules are different. See what you think.
He tossed her a small box, no bigger than a pack of cigarettes. She looked at the box, and looked at Pettit, and found herself without voice. He misunderstood her expression.
Yeah, that's right, Huntress. I've got 22, 38, 45, I've got 9 milli. I've got NATO standard.
How much?
Figure I've got a bullet here for every man, woman, and child in Gotham.
He took the box out of her hand, dropping it into the pocket of his coat.
This is how we're going to get our point across.
Pettit.
Huntress, we've already had this conversation. We had this conversation when you first showed up here. This is war, remember? And we're soldiers.
Bill! Bill, there's a...
I told you not to interrupt me.
Foley nodded, glancing at Huntress in apology, then turned his gaze back to Pettit.
Something's going on in Two-Face's sector. He's pulled all of his men out of the northern section, and there's word of a major firefight going on there. It's been going on for over a day now, something like that.
Two-Face against who?
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Hugh, get the boys together and get them armed. Anyone who's taken down Two-Face is doing us a favor. We'll head over there and take a look around.
Right.
Pettit gestured at the contents of the crate.
Want one?
I don't use a gun.
Right, right. You change your mind, you let me know.
As the last sunlight vanished from the sky, Batman alighted on one of the cracked gargoyles adorning City Hall. With a squeeze of his glove, he switched on the starlight lenses in the cowl, scanning the area below that led to the Hall of Records. Two-Face's men had pulled back. For the most part, it seemed to Batman, the battle had ended. He swung to the next building, landing easily on the flat roof, then crossed to the access door. There was no question that Bane had trapped the entrance. Batman was certain that he had, in fact, trapped all of the entrances. Batman picked the lock quickly, then attached his line to the door, and retreated around the side of the accessway. Any bomb would be directed by the nature of the architecture, and his observation thus far had confirmed that Bane was using a low-yield explosive, possibly less than an ounce of plastique for each device. Batman brought up his cape as a shield, preparing to use it as a bomb blanket as he had so many times in the past, and yanked on the line in his hand. The door snapped open, but nothing followed. No alarm or detonation. Dropping the line, Batman edged his way around the side of the accessway, peering with one eye into the darkness. Still nothing. He switched the cowl lenses to infrared, and finding no heat signature, switched the night vision goggles on again. Still nothing.
No, I don't believe you for an instant, Bane.
Flicking the night vision off, he reached into his belt and removed a miniature halogen light, slipping it around his right index finger and turning it on. Then he crouched at the edge of the open doorway and cautiously began playing the light across the opening, left to right, then right to left, gradually working his way higher and higher. His intention was to sweep the whole doorway before even beginning to attempt an entry. He hadn't raised the light more than 6 inches from the floor when he caught the bare reflection of the fishing line. He allowed himself a grim smile. Using the light, he traced the network of lines with his eyes, following the crisscrossing pattern until he was certain he'd found the leading end. From the first aid kit on his belt, he removed a small pair of clothing shears and then calmly cut the line. The tripwires collapsed like a spiderweb set on fire. Using night vision again, he checked the stairwell and now, convinced it was clear, made his way into the building. There was another similar booby trap at the bottom of the stairs. Once again, he methodically traced the lines and cut the lead. Then he was inside, standing in the long hallway in the dark. He rotated from night vision to infrared once more, scanning carefully, and then, again using the light, began making his way forward. He walked slowly down the hallway, finger light playing methodically along the floor and walls ahead of him as he went. All the same, he nearly missed the tripwire, not registering its existence until his boot had already hit it. And he felt the barest pressure against his step. He froze mid-step, his leg in the air. The line was all but invisible until the light hit it. And then the halogen beam turned it into a thread of silver, running the width of the hallway at ankle level, no more than 3 inches high, it looked like.
You've primed a bomb. Very well done. Now let's see you get out of it.
Foot still in the air, he swung the light along both sides of the hallway, looking for the detonator, trying to hold himself steady. Odds were that any more pressure on the wire would trigger the bomb. Any less would probably do the same. It took him 7 seconds to locate the device, a matte black box that had been inserted into one of the air vents in the baseboard. The grating over the vent had been replaced so that only the line was exposed, the device itself protected from any tampering. He felt perspiration beginning to slide down his back. His right calf was beginning to ache. There was no way to access the detonator without changing the pressure on the line.
Wonderful.
He began a mental inventory of the pouches on his belt, looking for something to substitute for his foot, at least temporarily. Rebreather? Too big, too bulky. Laser torch? Too small. Smoke pellets? Much too small. Miniature camera? Almost, not quite. Skeleton keys? No. Tear gas pellets? Too small. Power source for suit? Too big, too difficult to access. Digital recorder? Too bulky. Jump line? Useless. Plastique? Too little. Can of yellow spray paint? Spray paint? Lid on can of spray paint. That might work. Carefully, he removed the spray paint from his belt, separating the cap from the canister. Then, controlling his breathing, feeling the ache climbing in his leg and feeling his pulse beating at his temples, he began lowering himself with his left leg, bending forward slightly. He needed both hands for this, and the light on his finger danced along the hallway as he moved, alternately illuminating and hiding the tripwire. He felt his center of gravity shifting, his balance beginning to ebb. How much pressure was on the wire? Not much. Couldn't be much. Less than a pound, easily. Less than half that. Weight of the can versus the pressure of the wire. He set the cap on the ground, flat, then slid it forward until its edge rested against the tripwire. The sweat was starting to leak from beneath the cowl. He could feel it sliding along his jaw, then down his neck. The canister next, placed behind the cap to hold it still. It had to be perfect. There was no margin for error. Batman committed. He moved his foot back, away from the line. The tripwire didn't move. That was when Batman realized he'd been holding his breath for over a minute now.
Not finished yet. Bomb still primed.
He went to the vent, looking in at the detonator. It was a simple, functional circuit with explosive device, and he saw where the blasting cap was wired into the plastique. The unit was powered with a 9-volt battery. Using the laser torch from his belt, he set the beam as narrow as possible, then fired, burning out the circuit. Then he tugged the wire free from the unit, and there was no explosion, and he was still breathing and fine. And he got back to his feet, vowing that he would be more careful. It took him another 7 minutes to clear the hall on that floor, finding 2 more devices, which he deactivated as he went. Bane definitely knew he was coming. On the second floor, he found 4 more, and deactivated those. He entered the lobby cautiously, finger light off, again rotating from night vision to infrared. He found fading heat signatures, the residual glow from the piles and piles of spent brass. He determined that over 1,000 rounds had been expended in the lobby, most of them 50 caliber. The machine gun itself was unattended on its tripod just beyond the reception desk, still shining with heat. Batman stopped in the middle of the lobby, listening hard.
Batman! I know you are here, my friend!
Bane?
But Bane was nowhere to be seen. Hidden somewhere in shadow.
I am flattered. You remember me.
You do yourself a disservice. How could I forget you?
How indeed? But here you are. Ready for more of the same?
I see no need to repeat history, Bane. Right now, you and I are about even.
Died, you mean? And in a draw, there are no winners.
And no losers.
Batman began moving again, this time lightly, watching his step. Soundlessly, he reached the stairwell leading down to the basement archives.
We are not men who accept our defeats. In fact, we defy them.
When Bane spoke, Batman knew he was heading in the right direction. He began making his way down the stairs, finger light still off. As he neared the bottom, he saw the faint glow of electric light spilling on the floor.
You and I... we are of the same world. We have made ourselves as much as we have been made. You know this is true.
Batman stepped into the hallway, and there Bane was, waiting for him.
You may not believe me, but it is good to see you again.
I wish I could share that.
Batman took in the chaos around him.
You sure you got everything down here?
Doesn't matter. The whole basement is wired with incendiaries.
Bane held out his right hand, palm open, showing Batman a small silver box.
One flick, and it's all on fire.
Radio controlled.
With you in the area, I am always very careful.
He slipped the box into the pocket at the side of his belt, then adjusted his stance, centering his mass and squaring his shoulders.
Whenever you are ready, Batman.
Who said I'm looking for a fight?
Bane cocked his head slightly.
Why else are you here?
What's he giving you for all of this hard work, Bane? It's not simply money, is it?
No, not simply money.
Then what?
What does it matter?
I want to know what it's worth to your employer. I want to know how much of you he's bought.
Bane wagged a disapproving finger.
Not bought, Batman. There is no need for an insult like that. My services have been purchased, not my heart. I am as easily bought and sold as you.
My apologies.
But since you asked, it is worth a great deal to him. It is worth enough that when I am finished here, Santa Prisca will have a new ruler. Me, of course.
Of course. Santa Prisca, you drove a hard bargain.
He could pay it.
Absolutely.
Bane squared his shoulders once more, bringing his fists up. Batman turned around and started back up the stairs.
Excuse me, where are you going?
I'm leaving.
Leaving? You're just going to walk away from me?
Yes.
Batman stepped out into the lobby, checking it quickly to see if anyone else had entered the building while he had been in the basement. He could hear Bane's boots on the steps coming up after him.
You are playing games with me, yes?
No. Sorry to disappoint you.
You've lost your nerve, that's it, isn't it? You are afraid you cannot defeat me a second time.
Batman headed for the front doors, noting that they had been blown clean off their hinges.
You will not simply walk away from me! I deserve an explanation, if nothing else.
Do what you've been paid to do, and get out of Gotham. Our fight is for another day.
I think perhaps our fight is now.
Bane sent a quick left jab to Batman's head, missing, following with a body punch to the middle that connected. Batman pitched forward suddenly, doubling up from the blow, his hands out, brushing Bane's waist. Then he righted himself.
You win. Happy?
I broke more than your back. I broke your spirit, too.
He stepped aside, gesturing to the outside.
Please. Our business here has ended.
Remember what I said. Finish the job and then leave.
I shall take it under advisement.
Without another word, Batman moved into the night. From atop the wreckage of the Gotham First National Bank, Batman kept watch on the Hall of Records, the detonator he had palmed from Bane in his hand. He considered for a long while, looking at the silver box. What if he was wrong? What if...
No.
He had to make the man feel it was safe to proceed. Batman had to bring him and his money here. And that would only happen if he believed the way was clear. If he believed all the records of the past had been destroyed. Batman switched on the comlink in his cowl.
Oracle?
I'm here. What's your status, Batman?
Hall of Records. Just confirming the situation. It's checked out.
Robin and Batgirl just got back from the west side. They're awaiting further orders. They say the Kosa have retreated.
Tell them to stand by. Oracle?
Yes, boss?
The files. They're secure?
Still have them on my system. I sent duplicates to the Wayne Tech craze in London and Hong Kong, hidden in the system. So there are copies off-site as well. You want me to do anything with them?
Not yet.
Why are you asking?
Doubt. But he didn't say that, because he knew he could never say it. That they could never hear the word from his lips.
Good work. Out.
He pressed the stud on the silver box in his hand. Almost instantly, flames began dancing in the lower windows of the building, spreading fast. Whatever accelerant Bane had chosen, he had chosen it well. In under a minute, the fire had spread to the first floor, and its glow was beginning to illuminate Civic Plaza. Batman waited until the whole building was burning before dropping the detonator and walking away. He could feel the heat on his back. He imagined for a moment that it was what hell felt like.
Oracle, personal. Entry number 552. NML Day 294. 1410 Zulu. Dear Dad, it's quiet again, and I finally found some peace in which to write. Autumn is ending. Maybe it's that. The new chill in the air. The bite of the coming cold off the Gotham River in the Atlantic Ocean. Maybe that's what is keeping us silent. Or maybe, in the wake of Bane's one-man war against Two-Face, the whole of No Man's Land is nervous again. There was a lot of blood spilled at City Hall. A lot of Two-Face's men died. And in the course of 3 days, the NML's mightiest warlord fell from his perch, crashing into near anonymity. My eyes haven't seen hide nor hair of Dent since the Hall of Records went up in smoke, and neither Nightwing nor Robin has mentioned seeing him either. Batman himself has remained silent on the subject. All he would confirm was that Bane escaped the blaze. He added nothing more. Pettit and his strong men took losses too, trying to corral the fleeing members of Two-Face's crew. It led to more fighting, and people fell on both sides. My agent Charlie saw some of it, said that Huntress was in the thick of it with Pettit's boys. But that may just be Nightwing's influence rubbing off on me more than anything else. Doesn't matter, she's still with them. And the strong men, as of now, are still the safest cordon in the city, next to you down in Tricorner. I've had this feeling, though, Dad, like things are on the verge of changing, that we might be nearing the end of the tunnel. It's not that I can see the light yet, I can't. More that I just know the light is there, a little farther ahead, attainable. Problem is that, until I see the light, I'm still in the dark. This is what I know now, and it's mostly gleaned through my own analysis. Conversations with Nightwing, Robin, and kinda Batgirl, then supplemented by reports from the Eyes. First off, almost all of the minor players have been removed from the board, either through their own actions, or, in the last 2 months, by direct movement against them by either Pettit's strongmen or our guys. Nightwing, Robin, and Batgirl have pretty much been working their way through the city, sector by sector, treating symptoms as they encounter them. Of the named players, only Penguin seems to have any power base left, and he's been remarkably quiet. His sector has remained firmly under his control since Two-Face's double-cross so long ago. Apparently, he has no interest in increasing his holdings. Penguin's never been much for the kind of power games the No Man's Land encourages. He'd much rather, you'll forgive me for this, line his own nest. Two-Face, in the wake of Bane, has a handful of men left to command, far too few to actually hold the land he'd claimed. He's lost all of his northern chunk, which has already been reclaimed by Batman and the rest of our little squad. Further, he can no longer hold on to all of his southern sector, as I'm sure you've discovered. By all reports, he's pretty much retreated to the area around Civic Plaza and doesn't venture out. Rough estimates are that he has between 10 and 20 armed men, and that all those civilians who had been living in his territory have long since fled. So the wild card, as always, is Joker. Maybe that's why the city seems so silent. We all know he's out there. We hear the reports, second or third hand, rumors of madness along the west side, stories of bonfires and baseball games and stranger things still. Rumors abound. Joker has started a cult, a la Black Mask. Joker is breeding rats with which to infect the city with bubonic plague. Joker has become a cannibal. Joker is married. Joker is organizing a militia and planning on attacking fill in the blank. No confirmations on anything at all, and no idea how many people he may have gathered to his side. Just this morning, Vanessa reported in.
There's a rumor that he's been traveling with a woman who wears a costume of her own, but there's been no visual confirmation of that.
All just rumors so far, and that only makes it worse. Nightwing has spent much of the last week searching for him, with Robin and Batgirl helping. They found some locations where it's possible Joker had stayed, at least for a while. Mostly evidenced by the discovery of several corpses. The problem, as you know, is that Gotham is a big place to begin with. The No Man's Land has just made it all the easier to hide inside. And as a result, he could be almost anywhere and we would never find him. Unless he wanted us to. That seems to be what Batman is counting on. He was here a couple nights ago, and Nightwing brought up the situation.
Joker, what are we doing about him?
Nothing. Ignore him for now.
Ignore Joker?
He'll come looking for me. Right now, there are other priorities.
But...
No. If you encounter him, notify me and continue monitoring the situation. Gather what intel you can. Numbers, capabilities, and so on. But otherwise, do not engage him unless the life of an innocent is at risk. Leave him alone. He'll come to me.
And that was the end of that discussion. As for the plan, well, I wish I could be certain I understood it. But here again, Batman has been tight-lipped. The destruction of the Hall of Records was not the blow it seemed to be at the time. I know that much. The reason I know that much is because way back when Mr. Wayne went to Washington, and we could all read the writing on the wall, he contacted me and said that I had to make duplicates of all the titles and deeds. Yeah, that's right. All of them. For Gotham and the surrounding area.
Preferably scans, but duplicates however possible.
Is that all?
Don't worry about birth and death certificates. Those are duplicated elsewhere as a matter of course. Just make certain you get every deed, every title.
I had thought he was just trying to cover his own interests. After all, Wayne Enterprises itself was built primarily on real estate money, diversifying from there. But he was adamant. All of it. Took some doing. Took a lot of doing, actually. Took all of the eyes I had at the time, working 24 hours a day for over a month. But in the end, I had computer copies of everything Batman had asked for, digitally encoded, locked away on my system and encrypted like you wouldn't believe. I'd pretty much forgotten about them until Batman called that night when the Hall of Records went up in smoke.
I have a project for you. It's going to take a lot of your time and energy, but it has to be done. And done flawlessly. I cannot stress this enough.
Have I ever let you down?
Each of the files needs to be imprinted. In effect, forged. You need to turn them into unauthorized electronic duplicates, into notarized computer copies.
We're talking about over 1 million records.
That's right.
Whose notarization?
The government's. These need to be their copies.
Doesn't the Library of Congress or someone already have these copies?
They've been destroyed.
By?
Later. Can you do it?
It'll take time.
How long?
A month, at the very least. I'll need to write an optical character recognition routine that can identify the text in each scan. And then I'll have to create an entirely separate program, one with a semi-intelligent logarithm, to identify variations in the actual documents. And then I'll have to code a new routine entirely to replicate the digital fingerprint that the government uses for such documents. If I do all that, we'll be able to modify them as we see fit. But any modification beyond the official notarization and the code for the scans, I'll have to go in and do that manually.
The last won't be necessary. We're not changing the records. We're preserving them. Keep me informed of your progress.
I'll need Tim's help.
Fine. Just make it happen. And soon.
Why the rush? He left without answering. I contacted Tim and he and I set to work. We'd been at it for about a week, serious code writing, hacking at its finest, when Batman returned and dropped another piece of the puzzle in our laps.
I need a sat phone link to Lucius Fox.
Lucius?
Tim swung around from where he'd been working, giving Batman a curious look, then bouncing it over to me. I didn't even bother to shrug. Batman wanted a satellite phone call to the CEO of Wayne Enterprises? That was relatively easy to accomplish, and a break from the drudgery of the last week. I pulled up my tracking information, set my telemetry, then punched up the number Batman gave me.
Gonna be a minute before the connection comes online. Can't track the satellite to maintain the connection. We have to take the window as it comes.
How much time?
You'll have 7 minutes, tops. Then the signal will start to break up.
That'll do.
That's a DC number, isn't it? Lucius is in DC?
Put him on speaker when he answers. And give me some background. Cote d'Azur. And give me Kitty and Lee's.
I grinned. This was, in fact, much more entertaining than coding. I switched to a third terminal, the one I use for audiovisual, and got some background noise running. Then I loaded up the voice routines for Kitty and Lee's. It was nearly midnight our time, which meant it was midnight in D.C., too.
Hello?
Lucius!
There's no real way to describe the effect of hearing him switch into full Bruce Wayne mode while wearing the cape and cowl. It's amusing and alarming at the same time. It was like watching Bruce Wayne dressed up as Batman. And I know that sounds like precisely what it was, but it's so much more than that. Bruce doesn't dress up as Batman. Batman dresses up as Bruce. That's the only way I can think of putting it.
Bruce? Where have you been? I've been trying to reach you for weeks. Melinda said you were in Cabo.
No, not for a while now. I'm in France, I think. I think it's France. Nice is in France, isn't it? I'm in Nice.
He cued me with his finger.
Brucie, are we going to get another bottle of champagne?
Nice? Why are you in Nice?
I don't know. Seemed nice. Nice seemed nice, that's it.
Brucie, put more lotion on my back.
Who is she, Bruce?
Oh, not sure, actually. But she's real nice, too. So look, Lucius, the reason I'm calling is I met this guy. Didn't catch his name, but we were talking, and I told him I was from Gotham. Which I was, you know. Or I suppose I still am, but since Gotham is now no man's land...
I know where you're from, Bruce.
Right. Sorry. But he said, this guy, he said that he'd owned land in Gotham, and that he just sold it. Said that he was surprised anyone was still buying the land. But he said he got rid of it, no problem. Had this offer from some company or something, and he jumped at it, he said, just to get rid of the land. Because he said it was now all worthless, and he...
Wait a minute. This guy sold his land after the No Man's Land began?
Yeah, that's what I mean, see? That's why I thought it was odd, because, like, he can't do that, can he?
No, he can't. All of the Gotham real estate is in limbo right now. Can't be bought, can't be sold.
So, we still have our land?
We still have our land. Bruce?
Uh-huh.
You remember this guy's name?
No, just some guy.
I'll look into it. Thanks for letting me know.
Is it important?
Maybe. We're in a delicate position right now, Bruce. I've been doing as you asked, and so far, we've managed to cobble together a fairly strong coalition to lobby Congress. A lot of the larger businesses in the country have rallied around Wayne Enterprises, citing the economic crises created by the loss of Gotham. Right now, it's Marifan Holby Industries, Zeller Manufacturing, Star Labs. I've got another meeting in the morning at the White House to plead our case. Bruce?
Hmm? What? Oh, sorry, Lucius. There's this blonde girl, and she's kind of waving at me. At least I think she's waving.
Look, tell Melinda where you'll be, all right? That way I can contact you. We're getting there, Bruce. Don't lose hope.
I got faith in you, Lucius. But I gotta go. I just figured out what the blonde is doing, and I think she needs my help.
Real estate?
Land is everything.
It took me a couple days after that before I really began piecing it together. Before I realized who it was Batman was waiting for. And it's brilliant, Dad, it really is. Because the one thing that will save the No Man's Land, that will restore Gotham, is the one thing that even politics cannot resist. Money. A lot of money. Now getting that money into Gotham, that's the trick.